Hey, it's the Startup Podcast, conversations with Louisville entrepreneurs. I'm Dan Vonderhyde. I do this once a week where we talk to people making it happen in Louisville, and it's really my favorite hour of the week to sit down and talk to these men and women who have an idea and have moved forward and are really starting to take ownership of their own destiny. It's necessary in 2012, and there's a decent movement going on around the country in the startup world, and this is where we're documenting our little corner of that. This week's guests are Tendai Cherisika and Bobby Ferrari from Enterprise Corp. They are the entrepreneurial arm of Greater Louisville, Inc. Two guys that are working pretty hard to facilitate events and to publicize events and work hand-in-hand with those of us in Louisville who have an idea and aren't quite sure where to start yet. And these guys are there to grease the skids for you. These podcasts are on somewhat of a delay, maybe 3-4 weeks. So these guys were in the middle of August, and they mentioned in the podcast the Hot Dozen, which, good timing, is coming up on October 1st at 21C. So you can head over to their website and look up the details for that, and they sort of outline the Hot Dozen startup companies working in the space right now. We talk about what they do on a daily basis, the types of events they host. We talk about things that they see that are common traits in entrepreneurs and the traits that help startups succeed and the leaders of those startups. And I really kind of put them on the spot a couple of times, and especially toward the end, I asked them about companies that they've seen that failed, that didn't work out. Somebody had an idea, and they brought it to market, and they were doing some things right, but they just didn't work out, and we talk about why that happened. Most startups do fail. I want to try to paint a picture of why, so we talk about that in this podcast. I do want to thank you for listening via the Stitcher radio app. It provides me great analytics, and I have to tell you, I'm encouraged and I am humbled by the growth that I've seen from the first week that I did this up to, you know, each week I'm seeing a decent amount of growth. There's somewhat of a hockey stick situation going on, and I appreciate that. There are a ton of great episodes that we did early on that if you haven't listened to them, please go back and do listen. Ben Keaton was my very first guest, and he and I get on very well, and we had a really good talk. Head to podcrunch.com, click on the startup link, and you'll see all of them in there. We're mobile ready, so any mobile device, you can listen on there. Or, as I prefer, and I say frequently, the Stitcher app gives me great analytics, so I appreciate you listening there. But today's talk is great for people with an idea and aren't sure where to start. That's what these guys are there for, Enterprise Corp. Let's get talking with Tendai and Bobby from Enterprise Corp.
I think that from our standpoint, we love it because we feel like there's this underground world that exists that once you're in it, it's sort of like, how's everybody else missing this? And so I think part of what we're trying to do is elevate what we think is an elevation of activity, an increased level of activity.
It's funny that you say it because I asked that question of everybody that comes through here. I said, did I just dig into something that was already there, or is there a groundswell of activity that's going on? Because there seems to be a lot of stuff cooking.
A little bit. I think a little bit of both.
Okay.
I think before, you know, I came to Enterprise Corp, it's been a little bit over a year. I would have said there's probably not very much entrepreneurship activity. And this is someone that went to the U of L's Entrepreneurship MBA program.
All right.
So you would think that, you know, absolutely without a doubt, I'd be plugged into all the different things. But frankly, graduating 2009 from there, I had no idea who Enterprise Corp was.
Wow.
No clue.
Okay.
No clue.
And that's 10 years old at that point, right?
Right, yeah. We started in 99, right. Yeah.
And I think obviously now being, you know, in the weeds of it all, I think there's a tremendous amount of activity, a lot that has been created sort of over the last year as well from aspiring entrepreneurs and people and stakeholders in the community, which is fantastic.
This might seem like I'm asking you to throw U of L MBA under the bus.
Okay.
But is there opportunity for them to be more involved with the startup community as a whole? So they're just more ingrained with it. So they're turning out people who are ready to go and they have contacts and connections.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they can get, I've never done any of that stuff. So I'm asking, and it seems like there's an opportunity there. So.
I think, well, you answered.
First and foremost, I think the Entrepreneurship MBA program is world class.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
No doubt.
You're not
the first guy that sat in that chair.
No doubt about it. I mean, I think the professors over there, Dr. Van Klaus, Dr. Sharon Carrick, Suzanne Bergmeister, Dr. Irv, I mean, some of these names are people that are well entrenched in the Louisville community that are making things happen for the entrepreneurship community. I think as an entrepreneur going into that program, there was a number of questions that I had about sort of opportunity analysis, understanding valuations, understanding sort of making the pitch to investors, building, how do you build the right team and how do you build the right company? And so I think all those questions for me got answered during that entrepreneurship MBA program.
Okay.
You never learn as well until you apply the material.
Okay.
And so it wasn't for me until afterwards of trying to apply that material that it really started to really take hold for me, I guess.
Okay. Well, it's true, though. I mean, this is like the unsung news of the city. All of these, the startup businesses and the jobs they're creating,
mm-hmm.
and the new sort of innovative thought processes that are occurring within the, you know, Gene Snyder Freeway.
Right. Yeah.
And nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
And that's weird.
It's a shame. Yeah. So thanks for doing this podcast. I think it's an important part.
Small part.
But, you know, we would love to see sort of the business first of the world and the couriers of the world sort of take more of an interest too, because there's also somewhat of a national phenomenon going on, right? Sort of it is a hot space, right? Sort of from sort of political administrations down, entrepreneurship has become, I think, in vogue. Largely, you know, we work for an economic development entity primarily, and I think that there's new energy being put into place around America's sustainability is sort of a leading economic power is only as good as its ability to help early stage companies that have high scalability factors, and Louisville's just sort of a smaller subset of that thinking.
Well, that was one of my, you know, I have little questions, conversation starter questions here, but one of them is your build is the entrepreneurial arm of Greater Louisville Inc.
Right.
How, in as impartially as you can.
Yeah, sure.
How do we stack up with other comparable cities when it comes to fostering small? You just mentioned that it's sort of a national phenomenon, but how are we doing compared to, say, Richmond,
Austin, Texas?
It
depends on what metric you measure it by. I think that we are probably mid-tier, but trending up. I think that we would smoke a Richmond in terms of the amount of opportunity. Now,
you hear that, Richmond?
Yeah, that's right. but I think in terms of, but the goal is not necessarily to be Richmond. I'm just pulling Richmond, right?
Okay.
So the goal is to be sort of an Austin, you know,
Austin's. Do they set the standard?
Well, I think Austin, like we've been to Austin,
right?
Like Silicon Valley's legitimate only because they have. And not that Austin's not, but Silicon Valley has sort of just technology, especially software talent, coming out of its ears, right?
Okay.
They have major companies there that are employing hundreds of people in this space. Austin is not too different from Louisville.
In terms of?
In terms of just the feel of it, the size of it.
That's right.
The amount of activity coming out of it. I mean,
I'm not well-traveled. I've not been to Austin.
I mean, there aren't.
Austin, Indiana. Now,
don't they make cheese there?
I've hooked up in Austin.
I think to your point, Bobby. So I was just in Austin, February, March.
Mm-hmm.
Was down there right before South by Southwest, and it's my first time in Austin. And I truly thought that the moment I got off the plane, that I was going to see sort of entrepreneurship just bleeding out of people, and there's going to be startups on every corner, and entrepreneurs panhandling, even saying, "I want my next opportunity."
Yeah.
And the reality, and I kept texting Bobby, I said, Louisville can do this. You know, this is no different vibe or feel than being in Louisville, Kentucky right now.
How about that?
You know, which is fantastic.
And I think it's starting to, too. I mean, like, you know, it's our job to be sort of hyper aware of the entrepreneurial ecosystem. And one of the most encouraging things that we've seen, I think, over the last couple of years is the formation of these grassroots-led groups, you know, things like Forge, things mm-hmm. like the Network of Entrepreneurial Women, things like the Louisville Digital Association, things like Level One, you know, they're joining what was really only venture connectors before, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And so you're seeing these sort of people just sort of out of the need for association and sort of wanting to change the community, stepping up and taking leadership roles and getting people to identify with whatever cause that is. And yeah. I think that's the start. You know, when you have yeah. those groups and they're in coffee, you walk into coffee shops and you see people working on ideas that hasn't fully matured yet, but it's on its way. So there is somewhat of a social movement, I think, that's happening here.
And to highlight that, I think, you know, just a year ago, if you would ask someone to say, give me a calendar of all the events that are going on in the Louisville community with entrepreneurship, it wasn't there.
It's tough to keep up with.
And
now.
It's tough to keep up, and people didn't have sort of that one resource to go to. So we created something that we call the Louisville Startup Community e-newsletter, put within that sort of an aggregation of all the different activities going on. And I think that really fitted sort of a void that was there, where all of a sudden now you've got a regular communication where folks can come to see what's going on in the community. And we're not the only ones doing that. I think Forge does one now.
Yeah.
Louisville Digital Association does one now.
Forge has the directory on the website.
Yep.
So right.
Great. You know,
yeah.
I looked at that, and, you know, when you start a podcast, you think, oh, my gosh, I got to take 52 of these a year. Right. I'm going to run out of people to talk to. I'm not going to run out of people to talk
to.
There's
no shortage.
You
no
kidding
shortage.
Me?
No. You'll
that
be,
was
you'll
such
be
a relief to see that.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, there are updates to that every month.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's sort of the nature of it.
Right.
So
I think it's becoming easier to find out about what's going on mm-hmm. in Louisville.
What is when somebody has an idea, and we all have them, for the next super duper widget, whatever widget. Do people still say that anymore?
No, they say app.
Okay, let's use that. Okay, what's the biggest challenge of somebody with an idea? And you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, are in a place to sort of help them navigate through mm-hmm. those waters. What's the biggest challenge that somebody with an idea needs to overcome, and how do you help them with that?
Well, I think that somebody with an idea needs to get used to the idea of challenges, right? You know, we talked about the entrepreneurship program and how that sort of gives good framework, and that should naturally create great entrepreneurs. And it does from sort of a – they have the theoretical framework around it, but – you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, right? Is what Mike Tyson says.
Yeah,
that's sort of
right.
That, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And I think that's like entrepreneurs need to understand that. So I'm not answering your question, but I would say there is not one challenge. There are multiple challenges, and you need to anticipate multiple challenges. But I think the biggest challenge to an entrepreneur just getting started is getting started, right?
Yeah.
Whatever that means for you, right? So if you can't develop, if you're developing an app and you're not a software programmer, how do you raise money to develop that app? And nobody's going to give you money to develop it. You either have to get somebody else who has that capability excited enough to help you do it
or
ask your rich uncle because it's a really good idea.
Okay.
And I just think forward progress is the most difficult thing to do because you can feel deflated at times, but sort of just pushing through just the iterations of a life cycle of launching a company.
I mean, so I would imagine that most people can't imagine where to start, but just like how to plan something out.
Right.
What are the logical steps here?
Well,
legal first, accounting second, team, whatever. I don't know. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
So if I just hit on what Bobby was talking about and what you're talking about, is that so many times we see entrepreneurs start out with this long-term vision, they've got the grand plan, mm-hmm. and being able to scale that back in the steps where you can execute on a day-to-day basis and make that progress that Bobby was talking about is absolutely critical. So I don't think we can highlight that enough. And I think for me, one of the biggest challenges for startups is understanding that it's a team sport, right? So we get a lot of folks who come in and they think they're going to build sort of the next Facebook all by themselves.
I've done that.
Well, then you're very unique. That's beautiful.
Keeping it to myself.
That's right. It's a one-person social network. That's great.
Everybody gets along and nobody talks about politics.
Exactly. That's right.
That's right.
That's right. So I think putting the right team in place, early on is very critical to make sure that you can, you know, if you're going to build a web-based application or a mobile application and you don't have any technical expertise, you're going to be in a little bit of trouble, right? It's going to be hard to sort of move the needle on that.
Right.
And so that's sort of the beginning of being able to sell your idea, because you want to sell that to other people, get them bought into your vision, build your team up, and start to make progress that way.
I'm going to, one thing I would say too, so the thing that we do if we get somebody walks through the door and says, I have an idea, the first thing that we'll try to do, and is, I'll ask Tina to talk about sort of this lean canvas movement that's going on, is to make them understand what the difference is between creating a product and creating a business, and to understand basically all the considerations and broad vision that you have to do if you really want to create a scalable business. So, you know, what are your channels? What's your key value proposition?
That's right.
You know, who are your customers, meaning who's paying for it? And just really understand, you know, these different segments around growing a highly scalable business. So a lot of times the first challenge that we issue is sort of increasing the understanding and broad vision around what it is to say I'm starting a business and what it means for it to be successful.
You know, and it's funny, as you're at the very beginning stages, I think Brad Feld, sort of the founder of Techstars, says it best, is that most likely the end goal or the end company is not what we originally thought it was going to be.
Sure.
Right? And so you have to be sort of in a mindset of experimentation and willing to adapt and not just, you know, hold strong to what your initial vision is.
How on a, out of 10 companies that come to you guys, how many of those have died an early death because they were not willing to adapt?
Are they, I mean, so
they're just like, this is
common cause
it.
Of death, right?
Yeah, that's common.
Yeah.
More, it is common. More often than not? It is common, or it's a situation where they're not willing to persevere, right? They're not willing to get the customer feedback early enough.
Oh, okay.
Then. Right. And so if you're not getting that customer feedback, or you are and you're not willing to listen to the customer and make a pivot, right, then all of a sudden you get frustrated. You don't persevere. You don't get to the next level.
Yeah.
Company dies out.
I mean, you've had Terry Gertz on here, who's, you know, I mean, so these are some of the companies that we think are really promising, right? Parkview is really promising. Mm-hmm. Totally different.
I had Jeff. Terry wasn't there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Either.
So totally different from how they started, right? Try It Local, Todd Earwood, is now totally different from how they started.
Right.
You know, so the good ones to really, I mean, trying to do what some of these companies are trying to do, right? They're trying to get sort of incredible growth. And that's going to require you to discover a little bit once you're, you know, where's the market leading you? And very few people are able to nail that on the head.
What, the question, two different ways, I guess, to fund something here, bootstrap it up and just build it from the ground up, or venture money, investment money. What is the percentage there? How many people that you come to decide, you know, I think I'm going to do this by myself. I don't want to take on partners. I don't want any other cooks in the kitchen, that sort of thing. Or are you solely focused on that VC side of things?
We're not solely focused there, honestly. But the reality is if we have 10 meetings a day, eight of them start with, I need money.
That's right.
You know, which isn't, which
well,
is.
Yeah, but how many of them think after that meeting, you know what, I think I can probably.
Right. Hopefully more, they're less than eight, right? You know, we've had a couple companies now who, to not raise money though, requires somewhat of special circumstances. Either you have enough friendly money to where you can put the product together and really develop the business like you like.
Or
you
would imagine enough expertise in something where you can just.
Do it yourself,
right?
Or if you have enough traction and you are actually producing revenue in some kind of way, there are creative ways to finance that a little bit. You know, no, they're not necessarily friendly. You know, it's
cash for gold.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, a little bit like factor lending, right? Based off receivables. I mean, there are ways to do that. But even that, like traditional businesses are having a hard time getting lines of credit.
Yeah,
so if anything, we're actually seeing non sort of traditional venture type companies coming to us saying, well, we need growth capital. And actually we're considering equity injection, you know, or equity fundraising. So
I would just add on to that, that one of the things that we kind of say around the office too, is that raising private equity isn't sort of the end goal, right? I mean, it's a strategy decision.
Right.
So you shouldn't just wake up, have an idea, mm-hmm. and go out and think you're going to go raise capital. If you can bootstrap it and you want to hold on to that equity and you can build the company at the pace that you want to build it, then go ahead, put your own money into it. You know, secure friends and family money. Validate it with customers. Let your customers bootstrap your product or your company for you. And then if you're really trying to scale the company and grow it at a faster rate, and if it makes sense strategically for you, then go out and raise capital.
And the truth is, it's really hard for an idea to raise money anyway. I mean, even angel investment, which tends to be sort of the earliest type of private capital, mm-hmm. Non-friendly capital, is looking for some kind of existing product with some kind of existing traction. So a lot of times we get asked the capital question at companies by companies that haven't yet gotten there yet. And we have to, a lot of our messages.
They have a sketch on a cocktail napkin.
It is funny.
Hey guys, go get me my money.
I mean, not even that. I mean, it can be even more developed than a cocktail napkin, right? Okay. I mean, it can be sort of like, here's kind of a clunky prototype of how it works. And sometimes we're seeing even angel money not necessarily going into those things as much as I have 100 users. I haven't necessarily figured out how to monetize it yet, but these are people who have shown interest or subscribing or somehow engaged.
You're sniffing around to see if there's any fire where that smoke is.
I've engaged my customer in some kind of way, either through, so that has become sort of the key.
Okay.
That, I think, is the most common switch.
And your role there is to advise these guys and get them hooked up with people who can advise them. Is that correct?
Somebody
has some traction, they have a few customers, and they think, gosh, I may have something here.
Right.
Then they can turn to you guys, and you say, well, yes, you do have something here, or no, you need to do these three steps, or hey, here's somebody else you can talk to. Right? Is that...
Absolutely.
Am I stepping in the right puddle there?
Yeah. I think that our hope is that we have the relationship before that and the relationship after that. So we've met companies that are at idea phase, and then we provide connection to people who can help them understand how they get traction. And hopefully when they get traction and the capital is ready, we can connect them to people who are ready to, who might be interested to invest in the company. And once they've gotten investment, we can help connect them to people who might be able to help them find good team members to come into. One of the things that we struggle with as an organization is entrepreneurs are a special bunch that is a little bit like herding cats, right? You'll see them and they'll go off and they'll get heads down on something and they'll disappear.
Yeah, right.
I think that we can be more effective if we can create sort of that deeper relationship around sort of milestones all the way from idea to I've got some money to I'm trying to scale. But always really our solution is connection, right? So what we try to be is a focal point where if you come to us, we're basically cutting down the time it takes for you to build a Rolodex that would be helpful because we've already got it around whatever particular issue it is that your business is going through.
And you host events, you provide services,
mm-hmm.
all of these things. What's the most popular, like the best starting point for somebody with a young company that they're trying to build?
Best starting point in terms of?
Or what's the most popular event you guys host where new people can come in and start making connections? Is there anything in particular that stands out?
Frankly, we just had a conversation yesterday with a lady who came for us. She's sort of a budding entrepreneur.
She's interested in the space.
Yeah, interested in the space. And she came to us, and the first question was, or really the whole premise of the meeting was, how do I get integrated into the entrepreneurship community? I hear there's a lot going on.
I guess that's the question I'm asking.
Right. How do you do it? And I think the reality of the situation was that there's a long litany of things that we provided to her in order to get involved. So whether you want to go to sort of those grassroots events, and I don't think there's one that may be more popular than the other. Of course, there's a number, Forge puts on a number of significant events that, gets out probably on average well over 200 people. Venture Connectors meets on a monthly basis, the first Wednesday of every month. Get on average about 130 people to those events. Louisville Digital Association. I mean, there's just any number of things that are going on.
You've got to be willing to go out and shake it out.
You've got to be willing to get on the Louisville Startup Community e-news list, right? Go to the Enterprise Corp website, check our calendar, see what events are going on.
Start a Twitter page.
And start going.
Okay.
It's unbelievable how many people you can connect to
yeah.
through Twitter.
Our most popular event is probably the Hot Dozen. though, you know, in terms of the ones that we produce, which is sort of the 12 companies that we feel like are the ones to watch that we'll work at with throughout the year. They tend to be early stage companies, but ones that are on to sort of a cool need or a cool, you know, problem, good teams, some kind of traction. And we're doing that on October 1st.
That's an annual thing?
It's an annual thing. Okay. This year it's October 1st at 21C. Our other events are like
we do the Hot Dozen. Do you roll that out?
That's
in advance?
To be announced on October 1st.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's
a
good list.
I don't know how it works. Huh?
No, it's a good list. It really is.
Who were some of the Hot Dozen from last year?
Who were some of the Hot Dozen from last year?
Tri-Local was one of them.
Very hot.
That's right.
Earwood came in here in sweatpants. You guys are wearing suits.
That's about right.
Your closer was a Hot Dozen. Innovate LTC was a hot dozen.
Was NX Pharmagen? They were, I think, 2 years ago, maybe.
All right. Intrepid.
Intrepid Bioinformatics.
Yep. So we could name all 12 probably.
Right.
But
okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
Just to get a feel of who's out there doing
that. Yeah. But actually, another event that we've started that we think is cool, but to your point about the MBA program at U of L, is something we're calling the Launchpad Lecture Series, which... You're right. We think that MBA program is such an asset to the community, but we feel what we're trying to do is broaden its exposure to beyond the people who just are getting an MBA from U of L. So on a quarterly basis, we're taking some of their best researchers and lecturers out of U of L and having a free session over at the Kentucky International Convention Center downtown, where they'll talk about things like systematic search. How do you look for a good idea and whether or not that idea is highly scalable or likely to attract venture funding? Things like Porter's Five Forces in assessing sort of competitive markets, trend spotting, you know, things like that that we feel like is just good. It's academic, but it's good foundational stuff that we want to get out to the entrepreneurial community. So we're getting ready to have the second one of those on the 13th of September. So
okay, cool.
Yeah.
With all the people that you come into contact with in the office, at these events, at the lectures through the MBA program, from what you've seen and the exposure that you've had, what are the traits that make for the most successful entrepreneurs or people that are putting something into a venture? Is there a common thread that goes through these guys that are really knocking it out of the park?
I've got mine right off the top. I'll take the low-hanging fruit, but the reality is that you got to be coachable, right? You've got to be someone that's willing to...
Coachable, not the coach?
Not the coach.
I mean, there's a leadership question there. Like,
sure.
Are leaders willing to be led at some...
That you probably said it best. Are leaders willing to be led, right? I mean... I have mentors in my daily life. Doesn't mean that I don't lead in sort of other aspects of my life, but if there's always someone I go to, you know, that I can bounce sort of ideas off of, bounce sort of the direction of, you know, whether it's my professional career or personal career too. And that's what you want to see in a leader, in a founder, is someone that's willing to be coachable, willing to take advice from others. Doesn't mean you necessarily have to go and implement it, but at least take a second to think about it and have someone who is taking sort of that third-party look to give you a fresh perspective of things that maybe you don't
see. Somebody who's not emotionally involved.
That's right.
You have to be sort of objective in looking at it.
Absolutely. Right. And just to add on to that, for me, it's about execution, right? It's about making progress. So one of the first questions I ask for many of the clients that we meet with, you know, if we're meeting with them over a period of time, first question is, what's changed, right? What progress have we made since the last time we've met? And some of our best entrepreneurs are those who are continuously making progress. Every time we see them, they've got something new to show us about the development of their product. And I think those folks, coachable and those who can execute are critical traits.
And I think those are right. And I think to build on the execution point, like so try it local. I think Todd Earwood's a really good entrepreneur. And he started over at GLI. He worked, you know, he sort of hatched that business within GLI. And what Todd does really well that I think, I don't know if it's unique to entrepreneurship, it's good to anybody who, it's just good management. If he can do something in less than 2 minutes, he does it right now and it's done.
Okay.
Right? So his ability to sort of know that and not just let something linger, like it's done. I think he also does a really good job. I think another good talent is that can come hard is hiring and engaging talented people, right? Not sort of going back to the coachability factor, knowing that if you're the smartest person in your startup, then it's probably not going to work. And like, you know what I mean? So you need to bring in and engage good people with the business. I heard Cedric Francois recently say that he feels like a good entrepreneur is a balance between a delusional optimist and a paranoid schizophrenic. And you feel, you know, so it's sort of always having that optimism, never losing sight of sort of what this means to you and the upside in it, but also being sort of paranoid that it can fall apart and sort of in really
almost motivated by fear, like, oh,
right.
you know,
right.
We got to keep
by
this
both.
Thing going.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Hmm. Interesting. What is a success story that you guys have had since you've been, well, the Enterprise Corp, not you guys in particular, but the organization as a whole. What's the one shining moment? If you're saying, you know what we did? Look what we did. What's sitting on top of that podium? And what's something you just can't explain? Like you're scratching your head thinking, this was such a good idea. They had such a great team, but it just didn't work out.
Right.
That you're just, you can't figure out. So give me the highs and the lows. And over the past, you know, doing my math,
right.
13 years
right.
of Enterprise Corp.
Well, so we're only 2 years in, you know, each of us are basically 2 years into Enterprise Corp. So we can speak a little bit from personal experience. But I think that the organization really has a pretty good history. One of the you know, if you look at sort of, I think what we do probably is we can provide value at times when it doesn't necessarily seem like it's life-changing, but ultimately in hindsight has massive effect.
Mm-hmm.
Learning House is a company that just recently sold to a private equity company. That company got immediately more valuable the day that David Richardson and Steve Huey stepped into it. And that was an introduction that was made by our predecessor in the role, a guy named Vic Chadha, right?
Okay.
So he knew the two researchers at U of L who were working on pretty cool technology but didn't really know how to take it to the next level, and then connected them to some entrepreneurial talent. And, you know, 7 years later, that company's just bought out for a pretty good multiple and has 200 people working, you know, just down the street from here in 4th Street Live. You know, I think that some of the, why don't you talk about sort of some of your client, mobile med tech? I mean, ways in which, you know, ones that we think we're doing that with now.
I think so. I think, you know, when you talk about mobile med tech, and essentially they're trying to consolidate about five different neurophysiology tests within the hospital setting into one sort of mobile device. This was a company, I think, quite frankly, it had been a Enterprise Corp client prior to my beginning there. But the reality is that, you know, they had gone through a process where they had raised capital from friends and family, got to a point where they needed to raise additional capital to help build out their prototype. And, you know, before me, and I think Bobby had a direct hand in this, when they were trying to build out this medical device, they had gone to a prototype developer, I guess, what, in Illinois or somewhere, that had quoted them essentially, you know, let's call it $1 million,
yeah.
right?
It's not but, so much the location as it was the price.
Right,
okay.
The price.
Oh, yeah.
But we got them connected with a local prototype developer, TechShot, that did it significantly less.
Oh, good.
It's providing great quality for them. But frankly, they got to a point where they had this funding gap. And I think really sort of, you know, looking at how do we continue forward if we don't get the help for this. And one of the things I think that we were instrumental in doing is helping to put together and craft, help them craft sort of the right investor pitch for the right audience. So not every investor is the same, right? So depending on what audience that you're going in front of, you've got to be tailoring the right message. And I think that's something that we are pretty good at from all the different pitches that we've seen and really understanding and knowing the investors. And so from that, they've been able to secure through the vote awards an additional $125,000 that went to helping them finish their prototype development.
So they had a real serious problem, and that could have, that was on the precipice of being one of those flameouts.
That's right.
Like, oh,
that's right.
Man, geez, but you, just they could have done this.
You talk about two persevering entrepreneurs. I mean, these guys are at the top of my list. Trent Beshear, Brian Arrett. I mean, these guys really, they won't go away, right? And they won't quit. And in fact, now they're working on it full time. I believe Trent is, and you know, they've got office space now. They've raised, I think, $200,000 in the last 30, 45 days, continuing to raise an additional you know, $500,000-$600,000. They're well on their way in terms of getting to the next milestone, right? Okay. I mean, there's still some you know, journey ahead of them, but they're making the right traction.
Yeah, but it's become their life.
Right. So that's right.
That's the dream.
That's
baby.
Right. Yep.
You know, put all this other stuff behind and let's just work on the dream.
Yeah.
So, and what about a flameout? As I mean, with you don't have to get specific.
Yeah.
I know it's weird for me to ask
you.
You
want to name a company, an entrepreneur.
How have you failed in the past? You know, it's weird to ask that question, but
how have you as an organization failed?
How a company that you were working with.
Right.
Was there some insurmountable thing like, man, we could almost do it, but for this. And it's weird for me. I know it's weird for me to ask that question, but it's it's reality.
No, sure, of course.
I mean, how many startups come in and don't get started?
I will tell you, I saw a company that got sort of, they launched, created an immediate amount of traction within the customer segment that they were serving. I mean, they were signing up people like crazy. And what happens in technology a lot is they were able to do that because there wasn't much of a competitive barrier in space, in the space that they were doing. So anybody, and it wasn't necessarily very complicated technology. At the end of the day, this company was really good at sales, right? But ultimately, because the barrier risk to the technology was so low that all of a sudden the market was flooded with similar technologies and that company had to drastically change.
Okay, so they just weren't able to keep up with somebody with deeper products.
Right. Right.
Well, or
pockets.
An army of people going after the same space. It wasn't necessarily any one competitor, but it was sort of all of a sudden this unique offering that they were, you know, they were making sales calls and making a unique offering. And before too much longer, that same person on the other end of the phone was getting six calls from the same person who did the same sort of thing. You know, so it just became a really, so the space can change really quickly.
Okay.
And, you know, for me, there's two companies, and I won't even name them, two products companies who have had traction, right? They've had traction. They've been started up.
Okay.
Okay? They've got the product. They've got their prototypes. They're getting customer feedback.
They're turning revenue.
A little bit, you know. Okay. We're not talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, but, you know, $10,000.
Well, this conversation is over there.
But here's the deal. And it comes back to this whole coachable thing, all right? You've got multiple third parties who are willing to support them and help them, give them that outside perspective, who are experienced in the space, and they won't do either of these things. One, they won't listen to their customers, right? So they have a sales channel, right? Let's say, for instance, on this one, they're selling online really, really well. But yet, instead, they want to take a whole nother opportunity and sort of channel the product in a way that they're getting no feedback whatsoever. In fact, they can't even get meetings, but they're not willing to listen to the customers over here
who are saying, hey, I want
to buy this.
Yeah.
I want to buy this. So they're not listening to their customers, and they're not listening to the advisors and the people around them who want to help build that early stage advisory board for them. And so they're not willing to listen to feedback. And because of that, these companies have stalled and likely will fall away.
All right. How do we find you guys on Twitter? I've run out of things to talk about.
No.
How do we dig you? First of all, if somebody wants to get involved,
right?
If they like, what's the first step to getting in the door at Enterprise Corp?
Send us an email or call us. I mean, it's not that hard. We try to be as open as possible. It may take us some time, but it won't take us more than 2 weeks. So if there's anybody working on an idea, that's what we're there for.
Okay.
Twitter handle is at Enterprise Lou. Email is bferreri, F-E-R-R-E-R-I, at enterprisecorp.com. And then the website is enterprisecorp.com. Okay. One of the things to check out on the website for people that are looking to get engaged is the calendar of events. It's not necessarily our events, but we try to track all the sort of startup events going on in town and, you know, get out to a Forge event or an LDA event if you haven't been and you're interested.
And your excellent tea on Twitter.
Yeah,
right?
Excellent.
It's great. I mean, seriously.
Right.
That's a great
totally logical Twitter handle.
I love it. Guys, I appreciate you coming.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.